Gary, and I said,
just present something
for them. They're going to meet them.
I'm glad you're doing it. You know, just turn around and it's kind of important.
I'm going about 2 weeks from now. I'm going to down to Texas. My youngest brother's got a daughter.
Yeah. Good drive down?
No, I thought I'd ride the train. I've never been on the biggest problem I can see is they don't have north and south. Because I get on the train since at 11:45 and I got to go down to LA. That's where the train ends. And then I catch the, whatever the hell is the problem, Southwest Limbs. Yeah, and I go run clear over to New Orleans. And then, but it's only 3 days a week, that one is. So I get down, I gotta get a hotel until the next day. And then coming back, I go.
Thank you. We need to resume our meeting, please.
On Tuesday, I can't catch a train.
We've got some distance to go yet. So the next item on this morning's agenda is an opportunity for public comment on administrative appeals rulemaking. Patricia, has anybody signed up for that particular opportunity? All right, so there have been no requests to comment. So then we'll move right on into the appeals expedited rulemaking. Gretchen? Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner Goldenberg and board members. My name is Gretchen Robinson, and I work in the Forest Practices Division. And I'm here to ask your approval to proceed with the next step in your expedited rulemaking to incorporate provisions of natural resource reform into the Forest Practices Rule. So I'll give a brief summary of the proposed rule changes, and then I will ask you to proceed with the next step in rulemaking. So the 2010 Natural Resources Reform legislation simplified the appeals process for environmental and land use decisions. And in doing so, it eliminated the Forest Practices Appeals Board and made DNR's decisions appealable to the Pollution Control Hearings Board. The legislation also standardized the appeal deadlines to 30 days. And the effect on forest practices is that people who are issued stop work orders will have 30 days to appeal instead of 15 days to appeal. Also, the legislation made the defined term date and receipt the standard trigger for appeals timelines. This affected the stop work order and the notice to comply. Another DNR decision now appealable to the Pollution Control Hearings Board is the notice of conversion activities. And the legislature added this notice to the Forest Practices Act in 2007, but our rules have not specified any appeals process for it, so this is an opportunity to go ahead and do that in rule. Finally, we'd like to correct an error in WAC 2223023 that came to our attention just a few weeks ago, and it involves an incorrect reference to a subsection, and I hope you're able to see that. It was new information for you in your board packet. At your May meeting, you directed staff to distribute proposed rule language for early review to the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the counties and tribes, and that's a Forest Practices Act requirement. And we did make that review take place in May and June, and the board received no comments from that process. So the next step is to file the language with the code revisor for publication in the Washington State Register. And according to the Administrative Procedure Act, expedited rulemaking says that if there is no written objections to the proposed rule language within 45 days of publication, then the agency may adopt the rule. So I now ask you that you direct staff to file the proposed language with the code revisor for publication in the Washington State Register. Any questions?
Questions? Again, this is a legislative mandate that we are merely adopting. And because of the legislature's action, we can do it in a greatly accelerated fashion.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I so move.
Second.
Care to read the motion, please?
Sure. I move that the Board of Practices Board initiate an expedited rulemaking relating to the elimination of the Forest Practices Appeals Board and a definition for, quote, notice of conversion to a non-forestry use report by filing the CR 105 with the Office of the Code Revisor. This rule making incorporates provisions of the 2010 Substitute House Bill 2935 and the 2007 second Substitute Senate Bill 5883.
All right, thank you, Paul. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Norm provides a second. Is there discussion on the motion? I think the staff's been pretty good about explaining the logic here.
Commissioner, I just have a question.
Is that allowed? Question?
Of course.
just out of curiosity, who sits on the Pollution Control Hearings Board?
I actually don't know. I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
Does anybody here know?
That would be Kathy Mix and Jan McNamara Doyle and
Bill Lynch.
Yes.
And do they have natural resource background?
I believe they all do. They're all attorneys.
Could I retract my question?
Does that mean they're wildlife? Or?
And are these gubernatorial appointees?
They are. They're appointed by the governor and approved by the Senate.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion properly supported before us. Any other questions? Call for a vote. All those in favor, say raise your hand, please. Okay. Again, the approval is unanimous. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
It's a fairly straightforward issue before the board, and I appreciate your expeditious dealing with it. So the next item on this morning's agenda is an opportunity for public comment on biomass definition for rulemaking. And we do have some sign-ups. We have two members of the public who have requested an opportunity to comment. Stephen Burnett. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, members of the board. I'm Stephen Burnett, Forest Policy Lead for Ecology, and I'd like to speak in support of this motion on considering rulemaking on the topic of defining removal of forest biomass from the forest as a forest practice. Ecology is concerned that although this activity provides an additional revenue stream from the forest for landowners and some mill owners, it is important that the following is considered at the appropriate time. The definition of forest biomass is consistent with other statutes, that removal of forest biomass is done on a sustainable basis, no unintended consequences to soil compaction, soil erosion, or other requirements under forest practices such as downwood, that the removal of forest biomass is generally excess only, such as from landings and slash piles, and that there is recognition that there may be some circumstances where a forest landowner may market harvest forest biomass from thinnings to reduce fuel, reduce risk of wildfire or forest health, and that landowners understand that roads still need to be maintained in spite of the extra truck traffic that this will cause, and that those roads that haven't been upgraded to RMAP standards cannot be used for biomass removal unless brought up to standard to avoid risk to water quality. In summary, Ecology wants to be supportive of this activity with the appropriate safeguards. Any questions?
All right, thank you very much. Adrian Miller. Morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Chairman Goldmark, Forest Practice Board members. My name is Adrian Miller, and I'm commenting on behalf of the Washington Forest Protection Association. WFPA supports the board action being proposed to file CR101 that considers rulemaking that will identify biomass harvest as a forest practice and define biomass in the context of the implementation of the forest practice rules. WFPA's membership and many other landowners already recognize biomass harvest as regulated under the forest practices. However, we support rulemaking that makes this explicit. I think Stephen highlighted some of the reasons why that's important. This will help ensure that all landowners will be abiding by the same regulations while protecting the public resources, creating a level playing field for competition. In defining biomass, WFPA also suggests that the board stay consistent with the existing definition in statute and regulation. As definitions of biomass can have much broader policy implications, it's critical that the Forest Practice Board's definition of biomass be defined within the context of the forest practice rules. Having biomass harvest properly identified as a forest practice will send a strong message that biomass produced in Washington is regulated by our environmental laws, including the requirements for proper reforestation and protection of the public resources. I think Stephen's comment with respect to road use is, you know, a critical piece of that. This limited regulatory action is helpful in facilitating the development of new jobs and revenues for both the forest products industry as well as the state of Washington. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Right. Thank you. Any So let's move then to our staff presentation on the issue. Gretchen, I think Cesar have some comment for us.
Well, we're both here. That's a good thing.
Okay. Maybe a little earlier than you expected, isn't it?
Yeah, a little earlier, yes. So that's, I'll go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner Goldmark again, and members of the board. Again, I'm Gretchen Robinson, and beside me is someone you may have not met yet, Cesar Carrion, and I'll have him repronounce his name and introduce himself.
Good morning, I'm Cesar Carrion. I work with the South Yucatan region. I'm an RMAP specialist, and I'm here to help Gretchen on the presentation for forest biomass today.
Thank you, Cesar. So our purpose in being here today to do a presentation on forest biomass is for the board to consider rulemaking to include forest biomass removal in the forest practices definition in WAC 2216010. Oh, I don't know what just happened. So it's okay if I use the mouse, right? So if I click on the right, okay. Thanks, excuse me. So I first will talk about the importance of this issue in Washington State, and then Cesar will give an overview of the biomass removal activities in our state. And I'll talk about why forest biomass removal should be specified as a forest practice in our opinion. And then I will request your approval to begin the rulemaking process. In this presentation, when we talk about forest biomass, we're talking about the byproduct of forest practices activities. And I wanted to make sure that you know that we're not talking about the wood required to be left on site after those activities take place. So the removal of forest biomass is occurring more and more frequently in our state and actually across the United States. And this is because there's an expanding market for the woody material that can be converted into energy products. So there's economic opportunity in what once was considered a waste product on the forest floor and is now considered a renewable resource for energy production. Along with that, the equipment and infrastructure are being developed for collecting, transporting, and processing the material for conversion to energy products. A number of studies have been conducted recently to determine biomass availability in Washington State. And the conclusion seems to be that, or is definitely, with the studies I've read, the primary biomass that forest biomass is the primary biomass resource in Washington. So I am citing a University of Washington study that took place in 2009 or was completed in 2009. And they cite data that says that over 11 million dry tons of biomass from forestry per year is available for this use. And the clicker isn't working. And that's about 66% of all the potentially available. Something's going on here with our computer. Okay. Biomass in the state. So that's a large portion of what is potentially available when you consider all of the biomass sources in the state. And to get an idea on the magnitude of 11 million dry tons per acre, that could equate, they say, to about 11 million gallons of ethanol per year, which is about a third of Washington's 2008 gasoline consumption. Or it could equate to 11.5 million megawatt hours of electricity per year. That's enough to supply about 13% of Washington's total electricity use annually, according to this study. Oh, I'm glad I looked at my notes because I wanted to mention that DNR has recently received a $1 million grant award, to conduct a study on forest biomass related availability in Washington State also. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that number. I mean, as far as the potential, 11 million dry tons per acre is apparently quite a high number. So we'll see what happens with that study. So policy direction at both the federal and state level has really set the stage for greater utilization of this renewable resource for energy production. The Federal Energy Independence Act of 2007 calls for significant increases in the required volumes of fuels from renewable biomass over the next 10 years. And renewable biomass in this legislation covers a variety of sources, including slash and pre-commercial thinnings from non-federal forest lands. And the State Energy Independence Act of 2007, otherwise known as Initiative 937, requires the state's large utilities to obtain 15% of their electricity from renewable resources by 2020. And this includes forest residues. It specifically does not include wood from old growth forests or wood treated with chemical preservatives. The declaration of policy in this legislation lists many benefits of developing new energy resources in our state, including energy independence, economic benefits for counties and farmers, jobs, and protection of clean air and water. So the stage is set. The combination of economic benefit, availability of material, and the development of the equipment and infrastructure to move and process the material, and also the federal and state legislative support, all combined to make forest biomass removal a reality for the present and definitely a certainty for the future. So now Cesar is going to talk about the kinds of activities that are taking place across the state.
Thank you, Gretchen. Forest biomass in the state of Washington is currently understood by the operators and landowners to be forest residues from timber harvest. The forest residue could be found in different places within the harvest units. And two examples here is within the harvest units and scattered in piles along the roads and landings. Note here that the degrees of extraction will vary based on the location of this slash piles or forest residues. Another place and standard operating procedure is to transport this forest residues into a centralized location for processing into biomass products. There are several operators in the state of Washington currently, and only alone in the South Puget Sound region, there is about approximately 14 operators that are listed that have investment and interest on forest biomass. This is some of them. In the picture, we see a Herman Brothers chip truck operating. This is some of the equipment that's being used in the state of Washington currently. These are the chippers that are transported to the location, and they actually create the product of forest biomass on site. And you can see here two different kinds of equipments owned by the Herman Brothers Logging Company. One of the Mobark that in this case is producing hog fuel because of the product that's being used to create it. And on the other one is on the Pedersen machine that's probably chips, cleaner chips that's going to be transported. Another equipment that's being utilized is the bundler, the John Deere 1490 slash bundler. There's only one machine, as I understand, in the state of Washington. It's in the southwest area. It has been operating there, and its results are apparently pretty good. They're still under study. They're very common in Scandinavia and Western Europe. Another piece of equipment is the, or operating machine, is the baler that's being tested as well to see if the efficiencies and the results of the products are good for the power plants and cogen plants. So we see here that there are several products that are being created with the forest residues. The most prominent is the hog fuel for boilers and power generating and cogen plants, and also for the landscaping industry that at one point it was very much used. The chips, which has different degrees, cleaner, and which in the clean stage usually is used for the pulp plants, but currently is being sent sometimes to the power generating plants and cogen plants. And later, the last one is the logging slash that's created into bundles and bales, which is strictly is for power generating plants and cogen plants. There has been an evolution in the industry because of these activities for extraction of the forest residues and to create it into forest biomass for the power plants. For say, in this example, we see a chip trailer and truck having difficulty in taking this tight turn on the forest road, which was designed for shorter lugs, log trucks and track than trucks. There was an evolution. The problem is solved. Now the rear wheels can turn with the tractor head, trailer head, the truck head, and take those tight curves that are existing in forest roads. In this case, I think this was another Herman Brothers piece of equipment. The investment is quite heavy, not only in the machine, but in the training for the operators to be able to use the machine. So the FPAs that we can find in the state of Washington are currently listed here. In the Olympic region, we have approximately 35 a month. Forest practice applications that include forest biomass removal. In the Northeast region, about 40 a month as well, and the Southeast region with 12. Pacific Cascade region has 55 active forest practice applications strictly for forest biomass removal. The same thing is for Northwest region with 30 active FPAs for biomass removal and 20 active for the South Puget Sound region. So in summary, we have seen types of biomass removal on roads and landings and within the harvest use unit and transported to a centralized location. We have seen the different equipments and products that are being created, and we have seen the degrees of extraction that can be seen in the different harvest units, and it's determined by type of extraction machinery. And you can see here that there's a low level of extraction, a medium level of extraction, and a high level of extraction. And with this, I move to Gretchen.
All right, thank you so much, Cesar. So Cesar mentioned the forest biomass removal activity that we know of, that DNR knows of, because they were documented on forest practice applications. But actually the reason we're here today is that we believe that it's very possible that people wouldn't understand that it is the forest practice, because it isn't clear in the rules that it is a forest practice. So I wanted to give you an example. What we're here today to do is ensure resource protection, actually, through a very small rule change. And there's an example here of wildlife reserve. In the wildlife reserve tree management rules, that down logs and wildlife retention trees are required to be left on site after harvest activities. Particularly down logs, it seems like people might not realize that that's supposed to be left there when they come back and do their removal activities. If the activity wasn't connected with the harvest, then that's entirely possible. So this is a very good example of why we would like to have this activity specifically put in the definitions. So they realize that they have to, so operators realize they have to conform with all the rules for resource protection. Our goal is really to ensure that landowners and operators successfully implement existing rules that protect resources while conducting their forest biomass activities. And we think an easy way to do that is to include forest biomass removal in the definition of a forest practice in WAC 222.16.10. Now, because forest biomass is not a term that's used in the rules currently, we would want to define that also. And there are examples that we can use that are actually in Washington State law, and also a WAC that we can start from anyway. So, and rule development, as always, will take place with our stakeholders and with anybody else who would like to be involved in the rulemaking process. So, I ask you now to direct staff to file a CR-101 pre-proposal statement of inquiry to inform the public that the board is considering rulemaking on forest biomass removal. And I wonder if you have any questions.
Well, thank you for that presentation. So hopefully, I mean, I think we're on the board, we're all aware that this is an ongoing activity, that there is a real opportunity for forest landowners to increase their revenue through such activities, and that staff is proposing that we consider rulemaking to bring this under the forest practices.
Okay, the motion, and which is I move that the Forest Practices Board direct staff to file the CR-101 with the Office of the Code Revisor to inform the public that the board is considering rulemaking to amend WAC 222-16-10010 to include forest biomass removal in the forest practice definition.
Second.
All right, thank you for that, Doug. So just so the board is clear here, this is just a first step to add the definition. We're not proposing rulemaking about what is or what is not in this definition. Is that accurate?
That's very accurate, yes.
Okay. Yes.
Just a comment, Mr. Commissioner. I'd like to assure the board members and members of the public that are listening to this session as well that currently the removal of forest biomass is being treated as a forest practice. At least in terms of our company, we've been doing it now for about a year and a half. The Herman Brothers operation that you saw pictures of is the operator that's been working with us. We had a meeting with the then acting, now assigned regional manager for the Olympic, as well as forest practices coordinator, where we discussed this. And procedurally, if this is part of an active still ongoing forest practice, then it's a change of operator typically, because the logger was not the one that is going to be removing the biomass. It's a follow-up activity. If the forest practice has expired, then a new forest practices application may be required, depending on the type of specific activity. If it's roadside and it was treated as simply as log hauling, which didn't require a separate forest practice application. However, it still was subject to all of the requirements for RMAPs and any requirement for sediment elimination or protection, that sort of thing. So we have been operating in this respect always as if it's been a forest practice. DNR staff has been very good to work with in that respect. And I certainly don't have any objection to this, but again, just wanted to assure that is the way that the DNR has been treating it and working definitely to achieve and maintain resource protection.
Great. Tom? Thank you. I just wanted to say thanks for the presentation. Very useful, because I've been thinking about this, and the visuals really helped you think about what it is. And I also just wanted to encourage you along the lines that you've already said you're going to do, and that is work with stakeholders on the definition of what forest biomass is. Yeah. That's obviously going to be crucial.
That would be the main part of the work, yes.
And working with stakeholders obviously is the way to do that, so I'm glad to hear that.
In that same vein, the State Department of Commerce is completing the State Energy Plan, and biomass is one of the elements of the plan. So I know you would procedurally consult with the State Energy Office anyway, but I would strongly advise you to do that from the standpoint of the work they've already done in identifying both markets for means of production as well as opportunities for feedstock. So they've done a considerable amount of work in this area on the industrial aspect of it, which I think would be helpful to what you were attempting.
I appreciate that. You're in the process.
It's the State Energy Office.
Okay. Within Commerce.
Of the State Commerce Department.
Thank you.
And I can get you in contact.
Okay.
Just a comment I'd like to make on here. I haven't heard anything about what this is going to do for air, but you know, this is going to eliminate burning of slash, and which is a tremendous breakthrough. As a small landowner, we haven't been able to take advantage of it like some of the big have, but we want to. And particularly where we're close into communities, by not having to burn slash would be a big thing. And so we wrote another thing that's coming on this I haven't heard mentioned here, but there's people even thinking of, as this energy is produced, say, in our area, say in Longview, for the slash being hauled down there, and they're returning the ash back to the forest. So people are really starting to think, and that could be a tremendous breakthrough. And so there's a lot of concern over taking too much wood off. I don't think that's a problem. All of our logging, when we get done logging, there is too much slash on the ground to plant the trees. There really is. And if you can't get the tree down to mineral soil, you're not going to get it started. So what we do, we take off not excessive, just enough. We leave all stumps, all logs on the ground, just take off the small stuff. We want a quick burn. We want it over the fire minimal. But now, if we could take that smaller slash off and make a product out of it and bring ash back, it'd be a big deal.
And I'd just like to add to Doug's comments about air quality. I think most of you know that I'm from Eastern Washington, and there are times in the fall when slash is burned that it is a health issue, and visibility is cut dramatically, and some upper valleys suffer a lot from sort of air stagnation issues. So. To the degree that we can put something that's been burned to no purpose to good use, I think we have a great opportunity here.
And to eliminate our dependence on Middle East oil, wouldn't that be wonderful?
We'd love that.
Win-win.
I just had a question. In the presentation, you said it would not affect wood that's required to be left, and then you showed the snag, the sandy snag, and one laying on the ground, and I presume those are examples of wood that would be required to be left.
Absolutely. Yes.
I guess my question is, what are the purposes that wood would be required to be left for?
For wildlife habitat, small mammals, reptiles, birds, while the forest is regrowing. That's the purpose of that wood to be left on the ground. And also in riparian management zones, the large woody debris that falls down, you know, in the natural progression of silvicultural progression, you know, I don't know the term for that, but anyway, some logs would be down after a while in RMZs, and we wouldn't ever want those logs to be removed from the RMZs. So
I think broad ecological protection as well.
I guess one of the, if I could follow up, the my concerns is, I hear from some of our other tribal representatives, there's becoming increasing concern over how the sort of engineering the forests from how they used to operate into something different now. And the one issue I hear is the specifically is a removal of the natural layer of duff that used to exist in our forests and their role in storing water, releasing water, when, you know, those kinds of effects, you know, if you're essentially removing material that would break down and turn into that, you know, is that a problem? So I hope it's something we take a good look at over time.
Over time, perhaps. This is an easy we're making to do now at this point, so without doing that. Yes.
That was the direction of my question that I was formulating as I was thinking about it. What it's recent, so what body of science, particularly best available science, do we have developing to address those types of concerns? Because I saw that one picture up there with the high, I think that was the high, where, you know, it was scraped down to, mm-hmm. I don't know what it scraped down to, but I didn't see much sitting on top. But, you know, that started raising a lot of concerns about how much to take and so forth. And so is there a science developing around this that you have access to provide us as we go on with this, if we make this change?
Yes, there is science developing, and other states are developing best management practices for this type of activity. But we're not proposing that we address the impact of too much removal in this rulemaking, but down the line, that might be something the board would like to do.
Right. Yeah, no, that's what I was thinking, because, I mean, our species is a little good, more is probably better, and if there's a boundary, you see how far you can work with that. I mean, we all do this in our daily lives. It's just the nature of the species. And so it, you know, could have some negative effects over time. So it's more looking out ahead as you see science coming available to make sure that you keep us updated on any concerns that you might be seeing.
Well, one more comment on that might help Dave and Carolyn there. We look at our soil and our forest as our bank account.
Right.
And we can do anything to damage that soil. And I think everybody, we're out here to grow trees. And you aren't going to grow trees if you're depleting your soil. So, you know, when people are going to plant back, we're in here for 50 years or 100 years, we want that soil as good as possible, and hopefully we're improving.
If I could add, just again by practice, one of the last thing that any of these operators wants in their chipper is a rock.
Right.
So essentially, they remove to a layer that is above the ground layer. They're not getting into the duff, which is a very good question. That theoretically could be a biomass fuel, but you'll also get a generous supply of rocks. And if it did happen to make it through the screener, then it gets into the ignition system, and it's something that the biomass utilizer has to clean out of their system. So they don't want to do that either. So that's why we don't take stumps. We don't pull them out of the ground. Essentially, these are the needles, the twigs, the branches, some amount of log residue that is removed and staying above that surface layer. Come and see sometime, and yeah, you'll get a good visual picture of that.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that.
Okay, so we have a motion before the board. I just want to remind us.
Very brief. Too far. We have a great discussion. There is quite a bit of science out of Scandinavian Europe about the effects of over removal. They've got some serious issues of soil replenishing, replenishing soil, and water retention and nutrients and that kind of thing. So they can be overdone. They're highly engineered. They have it for a number of centuries. So this is something we can still.
Great. Thank you. Just wanted to echo some of Dave's concerns that he articulated, and I appreciate him bringing them up, but I also recognize this is, like you said, CR101, so let's go ahead and do it now. But I actually had a quick question, too. DNR is doing a forest biomass inventory study right now, too? Or
yes.
Just what's the timeline for that?
And I don't know, but I have an expert here. Also, Commissioner Geltmark might know.
Perhaps this week we'll be putting out an RFP relative to that. We are looking at an accelerated timeline because there's high degree of interest from many different potential users for the supply. There's a very high degree of interest in what's available from state lands. We're being very cautious. We want to know what's available before we start any agreement. So the inventory process hopefully will take place within the next 10 months perhaps. It's an ambitious project, but we need to know what the supply is.
Commissioner, there is another study underway by the University of Washington Olympic Natural Resources Center.
Just on the peninsula, though.
Yes.
On the Olympic Peninsula. And there is this older study that was done by WSU that is often cited, but a little stale perhaps, and doesn't have, we're not real comfortable with the number because we don't know how it fits these concerns and to what degree the ecological needs were addressed in that inventory. So that's sort of a rough estimate for that. All right, well, I'd like to encourage us to go ahead and deal with this motion. We have a motion properly seconded. It's there on your board to remind you that we're now going to start a file CR101 to add forest biomass to a forest practice. So we've had a lot of good discussion. I'll call for a vote. All those in favor, raise your hand, please. Looks unanimous. Very good. Thank you. So that's approved. So thank you very much, staff, for your presentation. So moving right along, it's 11:20. We still have some considerable time to conduct business before lunch. Next item is public comment on RMAP policy, on the RMAP policy subgroup recommendations. And we have one individual who has signed up to comment on RMAPs. Carl Forsgaard, please. Hey, Rick, did you intend to sign up for this?
Yes.
Okay. I'll put your name there.
Thank you, board members. I'm Carl Forsgaard with the Washington Forest Law Center, representing the Conservation Caucus. And the Conservation Caucus supports policy's recommendation that the board provide public notice with the CR101. For possible rulemaking on road maintenance and abandonment plans, which we call RMAPs. Our support is based on important conservation components of the package developed by policy, as discussed in Jim Hoffett's memorandum and the attachments. You'll see there an umbrella document, for example, that covers a lot of topics outside specific RMAPs topics that the parties are collaborating on, including the collaborative pursuit of federal money for fish barrier removal on small forest landowners' properties under the FFF2P program, and for funding for similar work on county roads, and long-term funding for the adaptive management program, and the completion of the work that's been ongoing on watershed analysis. We need to make sure that our maps are done well, and that we continue to do the worst first, and give anadromous fish barriers the highest priority. And key to this happening is the continued and deeper involvement of the tribes and conservation interests. In addition to the rule change, there will be board manual adjustments and an operational plan that will help make this happen, including regularly convening people at the principals level within policy, as well as regularly convening technical staff and interested parties at the regional and local level. The good news includes that there's been a high degree of cooperation on this, and we commend the people who've been collaborating on this in policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Okay. Adrian's saying he doesn't need to comment right now. That completes our public comment on RMAP policy subgroup recommendations. So I think it's appropriate then to move on with the proposal itself. And I think Stephen Bernath and Tom Robinson are going to lead a presentation on that.
Actually, we've got a panel that's going to come up.
We'll change the schedule on you.
How many?
Two more chairs.
Just please. Want to note that we all got a revised on that proposal in our packets from Patricia. So we should be looking at that.
Right, while they're getting ready, I can leave here once I'm done. I think Carl summed it up pretty well, that we forwarded to you policy, that is, forwarded to you a recommendation to change the rule that would allow landowners to apply for an extension of the RMAP deadline for up to 5 years. But that recommendation was part of a more comprehensive package that included changes in operational plans, developing operational plans, as well as pursuit of funding that Carl talked about. Now, I want to be very careful that I don't give you too much detail, because that's what the panel is for. I'm just providing a broad overview. There has been a change to the recommendation since 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when the earlier draft was sent to you. If you recall, in my email or memorandum, I indicated that we were sending you the recommendation based on conditions. It was a conditional recommendation and approval by policy. In the meantime, several people negotiated, had discussions, etc., which resulted in some changes, and I'm going to very quickly go through the changes with you in this. So page one of what you received today in your packet on the recommendation, proposed RMAP extension recommendations is the title. It's already in your packet, I believe.
Yes. This is the August 5th.
It'll be, the bottom version 17, V17, bottom right, what everybody should be looking at. So the first change is page one and thereafter. We changed the wording in the recommendation from sub-policy group to policy. The earlier recommendation implied that it was a sub-policy group recommending to the board for the extension rather than policy, and it should have been policy all along. So pretty minor change there. Also on page one and thereafter, there's a change in wording from large private landowners to just large landowners. So we struck out the word private, the primary reason being that there are other municipalities such as Grace Harbor and Montesano that also manage forest lands, and they haven't been consulted. So we did this in order to potentially allow them to participate if they were so inclined. Also on page one, we added a footnote at the bottom stating that the state does not plan to seek an extension for state proprietary lands under these recommendations. So the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Department of Natural Resources do not anticipate seeking an extension. on page 5, under bullet B, the last bullet, starting with all parties recognize the value, there's an insertion at the very bottom, last two lines, in quotes, including the conditions in Appendix A. And I'll get to Appendix A in a second. So that's an addition. And then there was a removal of a footnote at the bottom of page 5 in the original that you will no longer see. And that footnote basically stated that state proprietary lands did not plan on seeking an extension, but did not want to be precluded from seeking an extension in the future if necessary. That's gone and replaced by the footnote on page 1. And finally, the appendix, A. Is an RMAP sub-policy group meeting minutes, meeting notes, dated July 29, 2010. In it, basically, the importance of it is it contains 7 conditions requested by Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission in particular, and it provides policy guidance for rule and manual change to implement the RMAP extension recommendations. So that's the changes to the recommendations. And if you don't have questions for me, I'll go ahead and turn it over to the panel. I think Pete was. Let me introduce the panel. Heidi from WFPA. Miguel Perez Gibson from the Conservation Caucus. Steve Bernath from Department of Ecology. And Jim Peters from Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission.
Thanks, Jim. And thank you, board members, for entertaining this panel. Again, I'm Peter Heidi with WFPA. My assignment is to give you a little bit of a contextual background, the historic background in the proposal. And so, as you well understand, there's been a terrific economic downturn for the entire nation, and it's particularly affected the timber industry because our products are used in home building throughout the nation, and that's one of the sectors of the economy that's really hit the worst. As a result of this downturn, forest landowners, of course, haven't been able to market their raw material logs at the rate at which they would have been earlier, and the rate which we hope to see again in the future. And so that's reduced the amount of cash and cash flow that they've had, and reduced their ability to maintain their scheduling of road maintenance upgrades or road upgrades and fish barrier repairs. So the industry noted this and thought we ought to seek some relief, and we were advised to bring this issue to the Adaptive Management Program. And the reason was that the Forest Practices HCP is the Adaptive Management Program is contained within Forest Practices HCP, and the way the HCP is developed, it anticipates changes both. Information that comes from scientific studies, but also changes in economics and other things that may occur over time, over a 50-year program. And so that the adaptive management system was written into the HCP, and that the changes that occur to the board practices rules that are processed through adaptive management are anticipated by the HCP, and therefore don't require major changes, major adaptation of the HCP. We brought this to the stakeholders in February and started work with the Forest and Fish Policy Committee in March. We also engaged Jim Waldo, who is a facilitator, a professional facilitator that's well known throughout the state. And through his creative thinking, he was able to look at this, the broader picture of this program, and understand that we needed some additional assessment work for small landowners to really understand what the extent of RMAP work needed to be accomplished, or road maintenance work, improvement work needed to be accomplished with small landowners. Also realized that the funding for the FFFP program was not up to what it was going to take to meet the requirements of the Forest and Fish Agreement. And so he brought some creative thinking to expand the program to include those other elements, or the process to include those other elements. We learned along the way, we learned a lot from DNR staff about how to deal with the adaptive management program, and we think we've made improvements, or through experience, we've able to improve the program with this effort. And although we expect a slow recovery to the industry, this is a deep hole we've got here, a deep economic hole. And with some assistance by extending the period of time that people have to finish this, we anticipate a steady pace toward meeting our RMAP obligations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the board, I'm just going to give you a quick overview of the recommendation. This is really a three-legged stool, if you will. The first part is the actual asking the board to start rulemaking on, or consider start rulemaking on, a five-year extension for RMAPs for large landowners. The second part of this package is to recognize, as Pete and others have said, that we need more funding for FFFP. We need to also complete, as said, an understanding of where we are with small forest landowners and the roads. And one of the additions that is generally outside the context of forest practices is realizing that to get a complete fish passage picture together, that we really need to figure out what kind of a problem we have as far as fish passage barriers go on county roads, and look for funding to fix that as well. And then finally, a recommitment to try and find long-term funding for the adaptive management system. And then the third leg, of course, is the operations plan. How do you implement this? How do you fine-tune the system so that we have better information as to how, where each landowner is in their RMAP, how you can roll that up both on a regional and state level so you have a more than an anecdotal picture of what's actually going on the ground, and to fine-tune the system so that we're clear on how DNR is going to implement this program from here on out with landowners that choose to take up this opportunity to extend their RMAP activities, and how those will be complied as each year's work is done and once an RMAP is completed.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank the commissioner and WFPA for the letters that they sent and their commitment of working with the tribes and working on this issue together. This wasn't a very easy question or issue for the tribes. We are we had to look at the impacts of our recovery plans that are requested by NOAA Fisheries. And so by after looking at those, we knew that there was some issues with extending that, and so we had to bring some conditions forward, which you see in the Appendix A. One of the other things that the tribes struggled with also was they have an economic downturn in their fisheries also. The salmon runs are decreasing in some cases. We're losing more habitat than we're actually gaining in a lot of the recovery plans and the processes that we're dealing with and trying to purchase lands and recover important salmon habitat. With that, the tribes do recognize the timber industry's situation here, and also recognize that we need to work together. And the tribes, in their decision, looked at optimizing their benefit and protection of their treaty rights. And by allowing and working with this group, We believe that by fixing the Najamis fish barriers and the worst first by 2016 will help us continue to follow our recovery plans. And so that there won't be a major impact to that in achieving that goals, which those are conditions that the federal government puts on us that for us to continue to be able to exercise our treaty rights. The conditions that are here are, I won't go through, but it deals with some certainty of the tribe's involvement in that, working with DNR regions to examine the RMAPs with the landowners, make sure that the priorities that are coming in are the worst first and the Najamis fish are being, barriers are being fixed. Giving adequate time to be able to review that, because there's going to be tribes that, and other reviewers that are going to have multiple RMAPs that they have to look at, so we'll need some time to be able to review that. Hoping that we, when they come in, there's not going to be a whole lot of time, and we can approve that. Our DNR will have the ultimate authority to approve those, and then those guys can get out and start doing their work. The other part of it was tracking system, a better system that we are able to, not just the tribe, but everybody, be able to review and see how we are doing with the progressions here. And so then we could be able to troubleshoot some problems that we might be seeing. If somebody starts to fall behind, that then we have this principles meeting to try to resolve those prior to the extension date, or and try to resolve those issues amongst ourselves. So with that being said, I also want to thank the rest of the caucuses that were involved in this, because this was a good process that we got down. It reminded me of some of the stuff that we were doing in the Timber Fish and Wildlife stuff when we saw an issue. Caucus would bring it forward. Everybody got together to try to resolve that problem collectively with solutions. And it's sometimes a lot of hard work and stuff, but when we get to this point, it's very satisfying. And so we are supportive of this, the rule proposal that is in front of you today. Thank you.
Good morning, Board, and my name is Miguel Perez Gibson, speaking on behalf of the Conservation Caucus. I think it may be remiss if we didn't really talk about the larger issue here. Jim just touched on it, but it comes back to trying to get these problems worked out as originally intended under Timber Fish and Wildlife, doing it in a collaborative manner rather than doing it in a courtroom. And this has been this project, I think, has been a good example of that, and one that we should learn from and see how we can duplicate. A couple of things I want to point out, though, right off the bat, is that we're all here without the facilitator, which is a good good sign of good facilitation. And, we're up here as a panel, and the facilitators, they did a very good job in listening to everybody and helping us work through these issues. So I don't know how effective we can be without that kind of professional leadership and facilitation. I'll just put that out there. I think it does save us time and money in the long run, and I think it does accomplish a lot more for the good of the public of the state of Washington. Part of this issue, the other context of this issue, was that this was actually brought forward to the legislature last year as a piece of legislation that the landowners were going to, in my view, kind of unilaterally try to get through. And instead, they opted for this process, which has had, again, a lot of benefits to all of us. I want to point out that one of the first things that was done was an assessment of what the issue is. And if you haven't looked at it, the adaptive management folks, the technical folks, Pete led the group, did a very good report on just the status of where we are on getting this road maintenance and abandonment stuff done. Good news is a lot of landowners are ahead of the game. There's a lot of landowners actually who are even completed, and a lot of good work has been done in terms of creating removing fish barriers and fish passages. So I want to underscore that. But in the spirit of cooperation, when we put the landowner's issue on the table, we also put other issues on the table as well. And that's what I want to emphasize, is that in this effort, there's, even though there's no real quid pro quo, there's no caveat. We are here asking for an extension on the time. There are a bunch of pieces that are moving that are in good faith. We're all expecting to go forward together, and I just want to reiterate those. As you know, the small forest landowners, their obligation to meet RMAPs is dependent upon the legislature funding the Family Forest Passage, Family FFF2P, Family Forest Passage Program, okay? It's not funded. And the way the law is, all they need to do is get in line and they can continue carrying out their activities. But it's important that we fund that program. So there's a commitment from everybody here to look for funding to do that. For the conservation community, that's a conservation benefit that otherwise would not be happening if we weren't entertaining this extension. Another issue has been important to us has been the watershed analysis issue. Again, that's an issue that I don't think we would be making as much headway on it as we are right now had we all not sat down and worked on it collaboratively as part of this effort. And I want to point out two more things. One is there's the appendix that is in the report from the group that highlights the issues that the tribes have brought up. Those have been operational issues that, again, would probably not be addressed had it not been for this process. And their concerns, and the conservation community supports their concerns, is that the collaboration at the RMAP process among landowners, tribes, and interested parties has not been occurring. And as a result of this process, we should see that now occur. And finally, I think the other piece of this, or two pieces, they've mentioned it before, the program is in desperate need of adaptive management program funding, and the leadership of Washington Forest, the WFPA, has indicated that they're interested in trying to see the legislature seek solutions in getting that done, and then an annual meeting or process by which we come back and see how well all this is working is also part of the process here. So, in summary, yes, we're bringing forward one piece of this, but I think it's really important for the board to recognize that there's many pieces involved in this. Many pieces that we've carved off some areas that we can work and cooperate on. And I think also a testimony to how well that's working is we are also in it for the first time in the history of this group in dispute resolution. But it's pretty friendly dispute resolution because we are trying to resolve the dispute. And it's not a negative thing in my view at all. It's just we got an issue and how we're going to solve it. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Well, I'd like to thank the panel of policy that's here before us for their hard work. I've been tracking this progress for a number of months, obviously, and it's taken some hard work and a lot of time. And I'm very relieved that you've come forward with a consensus product and that you can recommend it for the board. And I think I want to just echo what Miguel and Pete have said also, and that there are other moving parts here that will be coming, some today, some in the future, before the board for additional action. But this is good work, and we really appreciate your time and effort. So questions? I'm sure the board has questions. Chair.
Mr. Burnett, in your opening statement, you said the recommendation had to do with large landowners, but yet in the third paragraph of your recommendation, it says, policy recommends a rule change allowing large forest landowners operating under an RMAP and small landowners choosing to file an RMAP to apply for the extension. What I'm reading is that both larges and smalls can apply for the extension, correct?
Correct. For those small landowners that have an RMAP. Correct.
That have a plan, right?
To explain to me the process that you want the smalls to go through to get this extension.
The understanding that I've had all along is that there are some small landowners that continue to operate under an RMAP, whether they needed to or not, and so they're being provided that same opportunity to get an extension.
Okay. So well, that all for instance, with the Doug's Tree Farm, his RMAP is completed and is operating under that RMAP, so he would be able to get an extension on his work, correct?
He wouldn't need to if it's completed. But
the RMAP's completed.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
all the work is completed.
Ah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I'm an example. Okay.
If he has approved, if he has a DNR approved RMAP, and he still has work to go and chooses to apply for the extension, then there will be a process for board member Stinson to do that.
And my understanding, though, is that that has to be done by 2014. That extension.
That's what was in the appendix, yes.
Okay. Just a comment, you know, we've had this discussion about data information on small forest landowners for years and years and years. We spent a lot of time and money for getting that data information, which is housed in the College of Forest Resources. It would seem like to me that we finally began to start making good policy decisions about RMAPs on small landowners based on good information. I would encourage this group to keep that in the back of their mind as to how we can go forward and really find out, you know, what is the level of risk?
Correct.
You know, if you start eliminating people, 20 acres, you're out of there, no streams, you're out of there, you know, on and on, you get down to a core of what is actually the problem, which would help all of us understand the level of need that we have here. And also been asking for money for a long, long time. We really, you know, I don't see how you're going to get more money in the current budget situation for both the feds and the state. You're going to have to really be creative.
We understand that. Thank you for that supportive comment.
Helping however I can, Steve.
One of the panel members that would have been here if they'd been in town would have been John Mankowski from the governor's office. So we have more than just normal policy and principles working on this. We've had the governor's office as well at all the meetings.
Good.
And no other feds with Bob Turner.
So let me just fill in this little gap that is apparent here, and that is there is a clear intent on the part of the office of the governor, on my intent as well, and others, to do a high-level ask of Congress to step forward and help on FFFP and the other barriers that need to be funded. So this is one leg of the stool. There are other legs that need to be fulfilled, and that's one of them, and that's finding the funding to do the work and carry out the study on the extended need.
Very good. I just hope we get the follow-through.
Well, your support and help could be useful. Other questions from the board?
I just had a quick comment too. I just wanted to thank DNR for your leadership and support of this as well, and especially being willing to recommit sparse resources to making the 2016 deadline. So thank you all for that.
I just had a quick comment. So as this being my first board meeting, having you all up there and presenting the results of very hard work and a consensus proposal, it's nice to see you're making my job easy at least. So thank you.
We try. Other questions, comments for the panel? All right, well, thank you again for your hard work.
So we do have a recommendation before the board, I believe.
So a motion to approve.
I move. Mr. Chair, I wanted to, Stephen, I don't know if you were going to bring this up, but I just wanted to mention that Bob Turner from NOAA Fisheries was also in attendance at many of the meetings where this issue was discussed, just in case some of the board members have concerns regarding the ACP. So he was involved in the process.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Tom?
I'd like to make a motion.
Second.
I move that the Forest Practices Board direct staff to file the CR 101 with Office Code Advisor to inform the public that the board is considering rulemaking to amend WAC 222-24050 and 222-24051 to indicate an extension to the RMAP completion date.
Second.
Is that you, Carolyn?
Yep.
Okay, we have a motion properly supported before the board. Are there further comment or questions before I call for a vote? I think it's been very well represented by staff and by the panel. And I think hopefully the board is as comfortable as Paula is to see that this issue has been well worked ahead of time and that we don't necessarily have to trash it. So with that, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor, raise your hand, please. Again, it's a unanimous vote. Thank you very much for that, and thank you, staff.
Yes.
Again, my compliments to the panel for the hard work. It makes the board's effort a lot easier when we get delivered a product that's been well developed. So with that, it is now 10 of 12. We will adjourn until 10 of 1. Please be attentive. I will resume the meeting at 10 minutes of 1.